Central Time. San Francisco has Pacific Time. Oh, I'd sing more, but I ain't got time. Ho hum, everybody. Ho hum a day, hum a day. This is Charlie McCarthy and Company. And the lineup of this evening's festivities, Frolic and Fun, and Melody is, well, tell us about it, Mr. McKinney. Tell us.
Certainly, Charlie. With Rudy Valley on his way to London for his two coronation broadcasts, Charlie McCarthy, the dummy that made Edgar Bergen famous, has gathered together a distinguished cast for this evening, headed by Claude Rains, that excellent actor of stage and screen, in a dramatic sketch by Kenneth Sawyer Goodman. Next on our list is a charming young screen star from Cape Town, South Africa, by way of Hollywood, the 8-year-old Sybil Jason. And there's United States tennis champ Alice Marble and her coach, Miss Eleanor Tennant. With us, too, is Johnny Burke, a veteran funny man of vaudeville. Johnny has always been a monologist, but tonight he takes Russ Brown for a partner in his tomfoolery. The orchestra will be guided by the educated baton of Benny Krueger. And there'll be able assistance by Judy Starr and the Swing Kids, the Gentlemen Songsters, and Sleepy Hall. The show is on with How Could You by the orchestra and the Swing Kids.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure now to introduce a young man. What is your name, Sonny?
Edgar Bergen.
Oh, yes, of course, Edgar Bergen. Young man, he will now entertain you with... what are you going to do, Sonny?
Ventriloquism.
Oh, yes, he's going to ventriloquism. Well, he will, he will.
Won't you? Yes.
Some of you may enjoy him.
Yes.
Bergen, you're taking a beating tonight.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you appreciate that, Charlie.
Yes, I wish Rudy was here, too.
Yes.
Yes. He did. He did go to London, didn't he?
Oh, of course he did. Well, why do you ask?
Well, I just didn't know. I was reading in the papers, a little disturbance, you know. A little legal complications.
Oh, I see.
Of course, I hope for the best.
Yes. Oh, well, I'm sure he's in London.
Yeah. How long will he be gone?
About 4 weeks.
4 weeks, yes. 4 and 7, 28, 9. Uh-oh. Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
What's the matter?
Just a nice way of saying 30 days.
Oh, no.
Well, was going over to the coronation, you know.
Yes.
I even went so far as to have my silk breeches made up.
You do?
But the tailor, he went all haywire.
I see.
The pants were too tight under the armpits.
Oh, that is.
I was going to wear my football knickerbockers, but yeah, they don't look good. They have a patch in the seat anyhow.
Well, that would certainly look awful.
Yes, that's what everybody said, but I couldn't see it.
No.
When I turned around to look, I wasn't there.
No. Yes. Well, I think it's just as well, Charlie, that you didn't go to London.
Why?
Well, I would be worried about you on the boat and over in England.
Oh, silly boy. I'm one of the few people that really knows how to get around.
Is that so?
Yes. On my last trip, I rode first class on a third-class ticket.
Is that what?
You gotta know your rope to do that.
Yeah. Well, how did you ride first class on a third-class passage?
Well, it's a long story.
Yes.
And it's a dirty one, too. Third class, there's a door that says keep out. Well, that's where you go through.
I
then you climb over a rail or two, and then you're in first class from then on and on until the purser gets wise to you.
I see.
Yes. I was even invited to sit at the captain's table.
Is that so?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is an honor.
Yeah, but I didn't know it. I refused.
You refused?
Yeah.
Why?
I didn't want to eat with a help.
Oh. That must have started something.
Yes, it did. The purser said, "You, young man, what's your cabin number, see?" But nasty-like.
Yes.
I said, "Well, I moved. It's very stuffy down there."
Yes.
He says, "Well, where did you stay last night?" I said, "I stayed with friends."
With friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that cleared it up?
Yeah, but not for long.
I see.
He wanted to know the number of my friend's cabin.
I see.
I said, "That's none of your business. You get your own friends."
I see.
So he said, "Well, until I find out where you belong, you're going in third class."
I see.
I said, "You're not sending me to third class." So I said, "I want to talk to the captain."
That's right.
Yes.
And did you talk to the captain?
I certainly did. I didn't mince words. I didn't mince them. He didn't either.
No. Well, what happened?
Well, we talked and talked and talked and talked and talked.
And?
And I went back to third class. And take it from me, Bergen, there isn't much class in third class.
I'll bet there isn't.
Oh, all that dining room. The way they crowd us in that dining room at the tables, elbows, elbows, elbows. Disgusting.
Yes.
Yeah, I was trying to eat corn on the cob, and I ate three buttons off my own sleeve. Yes.
But you didn't have to dress for dinner.
No, no, but you had to change clothes after dinner.
Well, you do meet interesting people, though, don't you, traveling?
Yes, you do. You know, 3 years ago, coming back from Australia, or was it 5 years? No, I think it was last summer. For that matter, was it Australia? Couldn't have been. I've never been there. But I'm sure it's there.
Yeah.
However, we were 3 days out of Pango Pango when we lost our rudder.
I see.
And we floundered and floundered. A nicer bit of floundering I've never seen. I wore a porthole for 3 days. As a lavalier.
Well, were there any casualties?
Well, almost. One man was washed overboard.
Is that so?
Yes. And he said, "Save me, save me, save me. I'm the father of 16 children. I says, "I'll save you, but this is no time to be bragging."
Well...
Oh, there's no thanks in helping people.
No.
No. I got in wrong with the captain there, too.
You did?
Yes. Just through a suggestion.
Yes.
He said, "Gentlemen, something must be done. The ship is leaking." And all I said was, "Why not put a pan under it?"
people who make their way through this world by entertaining you and you and you have a way of expressing their appreciation for real talent. Behind the grease paint and makeup of a performer, they look for fine shadings and characterization, the timing of lines, the tempo and pace and heart that a man brings to his work. When they find them in just the right proportion, they say, that fellow is an actor's actor. Just such a man is our distinguished guest this evening, Mr. Claude Rains, a star of Warner Brothers Pictures, currently appearing now in The Prince and the Pauper. Never in the memory of the oldest member of the Lambs or the Players Club has he given anything but an expert performance. Tonight, Mr. Rains will be assisted by Harold Vermillier, Roland Hogue, Bradford Kirkbride, presenting now Mr. Claude Rains as Alexis in The Game of Chess by Kenneth Sawyer Goodman.
Luxurious drawing room in the home of Alexis Alexandrovich, Russian governor. The time, Russia, in the days of the Tsars. Alexis and his friend Constantine are playing chess at a small table in front of an open fire. Constantine speaks.
Is the hour up, Your Excellency?
No, we still have time to play.
Your Excellency tires of the game, perhaps?
I never tired of the game. When I do that, I shall tire of life itself. Chess is as much a gauge of man's mental development as love or war or any other game. When I play bad chess, I shall have ceased to be a competent governor.
Your Excellency.
Yes?
A man, Boris Ivanovich, with a letter for Your Excellency, is waiting in the secretary's room.
You may bring him here in 2 minutes.
Yes, Your Excellency.
Your move, my dear Constantine. We have exactly 1 minute to finish the game and 1 minute for questions. So. 1 moment. There. What now?
This
and this.
Aha! I could checkmate Your Excellency in 5 more moves.
Time is up. Tell me, you are quite certain that your agents made no mistake in the matter of this man, Ivanovich?
Quite certain, Your Excellency. I begged you to have him put under arrest yesterday. The man's entire history is in your hands.
And in spite of all this, I have given explicit orders that he is not to be searched. In short, I must be a fool.
Oh, I cannot question Your Excellency's judgment.
No, but I saw something behind your eyes just now when you said you would checkmate me in 5 more moves. Do you think I've become a coward?
Your Excellency.
I sometimes think so myself. Then sometimes there may be no flash that I shall be checkmated once and for all. That's why I am tempted to try another kind of game with this man, Ivanovich.
Then you have a definite reason for seeing this man. Oh, but surely it would be safer,
Your
Excellency.
Don't speak to me as if you were speaking to a child. I know what you think. Alexis Alexandrovich is not what he was. Well, the time is up. You have your orders.
Shall I take away the chessmen?
No, leave them as they are. We'll finish the game when I ring for you. Well, well, well. So you think the game won't be finished? We'll see about that.
Oh, but Your Excellency, I beg of you.
Your Excellency, here is the man.
Mm-hmm. So you are Boris Ivanovich.
I am.
Well, Constantine, what are you waiting for? This man has something important to say to me. He's bashful.
Your Excellency, I will wait in the passage.
Oh, nonsense. Go into the garden and think about your game of chess. Go on. So, Boris Ivanovich, there is no one watching us. This room is in a corner of the house. Nothing but windows behind you, no balcony, no hangings. You see, we won't be disturbed. Now sit down and tell me what you want. Tongue-tied, eh? You don't know how to begin?
I was wondering why Your Excellency gave me this chance.
This chance?
To kill Your Excellency.
To kill me? Oh, so that's it, is it? Well, well, well. Now, I thought as much, but of course I couldn't be sure. You may as well take the pistol out of your pocket.
Your Excellency seems amused.
Oh, no, no, not amused. I'm only curious to see you handle the thing. A morbid curiosity, if you like. Take the pistol out, man. Take it out.
Keep your hand a little farther from that bell.
Oh, I shan't ring. You would hardly wait for them to answer the bell, would you? Of course not. I lift my hand, and you shoot.
Yes.
Well, I won't lift my hand.
Nothing on earth can save you, Alexis Alexandrovich.
Nor you, my friend, for that matter. You hardly expect to leave the house, shall we say, unmolested.
You don't expect to leave it alive, Excellency.
Oh, come, come, come. You must hate me a great deal, my friend, to give your own life for the sake of taking mine.
I don't hate you.
How odd. I thought that every one of your sort hated me. You might at least flatter me to the extent of showing some emotion.
Do you want to pray, Excellency?
Pray? Pray? Oh, no, no. I'd rather chat with you until you gather courage to do what you came for.
It takes no courage to kill a thing like you.
It takes a certain kind of courage to kill rats.
I've been chosen, Excellency.
And won't you tell me about it?
I'm a peasant. My father and my father's father were peasants. You're a noble. Your line runs back to Tartar princes. It's a matter of centuries of pain and slavery against centuries of oppression and violence. You and I are nothing. It's caste against caste. I gave myself to the Revolutionary Party, yes. I'm their agent, as you say. I don't know much of their ideas for Russia, but I care less. I only know that the band I belong to represents the struggle which I feel in my own breast.
Eh? Centuries of pain against centuries of oppression. Well, well. You know, you throw your own little pains and penalties out of the scale on one side, and my little tyrannies and flogging as an act of villainy out on the other. You're exalted by the breath of dead peasants, are you? How grotesque. You're about to commit a fantastic mockery of justice.
I've held my hand too long.
Wait. Wait. There is still something to be said. Something for you to think of in the moment between the time you take my life and the time you take your own. You are about to kill the man you might have been yourself. I, not you, am Boris Ivanovich.
What rubbish are you talking now?
You are Alexis Alexandrovich.
What? Why, you're mad.
When you were a child, you had a foster brother. You ran with him in the fields. You slept by his side at night. When you were 7 years old, a man on horseback came and took him away. You never knew his true parentage. Can you remember that?
Aye, I can remember that well.
Your father deserted your mother the following year. A little later, she died. She told you nothing of the other child. You went to Kiev, to the house of your uncle.
Leave off! You can't mystify me by telling me the story of my own life. It proves nothing. Your agents have ways of knowing such things. What I was, what I am, everything.
Yet we are foster brothers, you and I.
Then give me a sign.
Our good mother was endowed with a grim sense of humor. She sent her own boy to be reared as the son of princes, and the little aristocrat she sent... Well, you know to what sort of life she sent him.
Give me a sign.
I have no sign to give you.
Yeah, what else? What else have you to tell me?
I, and not you, am the son of peasants. You see now why I call your errand grotesque?
You expect me to believe you? You expect me to embrace you and throw this pistol out the window and tell you to do what you like with me?
I expect nothing.
No.
That I am one dead man talking to another.
And I know there must be some trick up your sleeve.
There is no trick. You think I wish to believe myself born a peasant? I, who have sat in high places and given my life to preserving an order of which men... I do not belong, which my blood ought to cry out against. Do you think I would have believed it if the belief had not been forced upon me? You are striking at a man who is dead before you touch him. I have come to the end, I tell you. I would have killed myself today, but I have a horror of taking my own life. You have come just in time to save me from that.
Was that your only reason for seeing me?
I admit I was curious to see another man who had been as great a dupe as myself.
Oh, lies, lies. What else? Is there anything more to say?
I only ask you to finish your work. Unless you have a scruple against killing your foster brother, in which case the door is still open to you.
Very pretty, very touching. Go back, huh, and tell my comrades that I let Alexis slip through my fingers because he told me a child's story of changeling's foster brothers. Oh, no.
Kill me, then. Go on. Pull the trigger.
You can't.
No, I can't. There's a chance that what you've said may be true after all. And yet, I can't live if it's false, and I can't live if it's true.
In either case, we must both die.
I dare not kill you. I tell you, I dare not. There must be some other way out.
Are you brave enough to take poison? Yes? Good. You see this ring? I press a spring, so. There is a fine powder under the stone. I drop a few grains into one of these glasses. We draw lots. One of us drinks the wine, and the other still has your pistol to use.
Ah, now I see the trick. Yeah, you're very clever with your sleight of hand, but I don't draw lots for poison with the likes of you.
But see, there's more than enough for both. Take the glass in your own hands. Divide it yourself. Pour the wine yourself, and then, to satisfy you, I'll drink first.
Yeah, you carry the bluff to the bitter end, do you? Well, we'll see.
To your easy death, brother.
So you're a brave man after all. What if I were to leave you now?
Huh? My men have orders to seize you the moment you leave the room.
Well, in that case, to your final redemption, brother.
Shall we sit?
How long have we got to wait?
Oh, perhaps 5 minutes. It's a Chinese concoction. They call it the draft of final oblivion. I'm told that one becomes numb. Do you find yourself becoming numb?
No. My senses seem to be more alert. Your voice sounds very sharp and clear.
Try to move your arms.
I don't seem to be able to. That's strange. I can't feel anything.
Can you get out of your chair?
I might move by a great effort, but I haven't the will. I don't feel pain, only a ringing in my head.
Can you still hear perfectly?
Yes, I can still hear. Now tell me, on your hope of redemption, was what you said to me just now the truth?
On my hope of redemption, Boris Ivanovich, everything I told you was lies, lies, lies!
You fiend, you're a liar! Now, at least you can't escape. No need for me to strike you. You're feeling the agony too, Alexis Alexandrovich. You can't deny it.
I'm not dying, Boris Ivanovich.
But I know. I saw you drink.
And your eye wasn't off me an instant, was it? And you didn't lift your cup till I drained the last drop of mine, did you? Well?
I saw you drink what I drank.
Yes, I did drink it, Boris Ivanovich. But what is sending you down to fry in hell with the stupid ghosts of your bestial ancestors is only embarrassing me with the slightest of headaches.
It's not possible.
An oriental trick. A man in constant fear of poison may accustom himself, little by little, to a dose that would blast the life of an ordinary man.
Why have you done this thing to me?
Body of St. Michael! You're a terrorist, a Red. The blood of my brother shot down in the streets of Kronstadt, the lives of my friends, the preservation of the sacred empire. Are these nothing? Nothing? Besides your dirty petitions of right? You have been delivered into my hands. Can you still hear me, Boris Ivanovich?
Yes.
Then one thing more. Why did I risk my own life to get yours? Well, it was because men were thinking that Alexis Alexandrovich wasn't what he used to be, because I was beginning to think so myself. I had to look into the muzzle of your pistol to pit my life against yours, with no other weapon, no other help, but my own wits. Now, I think it unlikely that Constantine will checkmate me in 5 more moves.
You fiend! You fiend! You fiend!
Uh-huh. So it's over, is it? Well, well, well. Peace be with you, brother.
Your Excellency rang?
Yes. Go into the garden and find Mr. Constantine. Tell him I am ready to finish our game of chess.
Oh, Mr. Boganovich, wasn't that sad?
There, Charlie, don't cry. Listen to Judy Starr and the orchestra, and I've got my love to keep you warm.
Coming week is going to be a specially good time for dining out. It's going to be National Restaurant Week. So next week, break the old routine of eating at home. Give the good wife a night off. Give yourselves the chance. To Johnny Burke and Russ Brown, Alice Marble and Eleanor Tennant.
Her eyes are big. And when they open wide with astonishment or some particular delight, they're even bigger. She's very small, very young, very nice. She was born 8 years ago in Cape Town, South Africa, and finally arrived in Hollywood by way of London, where she made several pictures.
Out on the coast,
she's made a name for herself in the celluloid operas as Captain's Kid, I Found Stella Parrish, and The Great O'Malley. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Sybil Jason.
Dog, and his name was Mike. He was black and curly, and the cutest little type. Early every morning, Mike would jump up on my bed. His bark would say, "Come on, let's play. Get up, you sleepy head." Everything that I would do, my Mike would want to do. When I'd sing, he'd sort of bark in too. Then at night he'd cuddle close to me and go to sleep with his funny coldish nose against my cheek. My little black Scotty, Mike, my always true blue. Whenever I was gay, my Mike would run and play. Whenever I was lonely, Mike was lonely too. Like I would sometimes be naughty. Mike would sometimes be bad. But he could be so good, as dogs and children should. He was the best pal I ever had. Something happened to my Mike. He didn't want to play. He'd just lie there and look at me. I'd hold him and I'd say, "Mama." He'd whine and pull my skirt and bark a little bark to try and show me where it hurt. I love my little doggy. Little coat of black that doctor came and got him, and he never brought him back. He couldn't bring him back because my little Mike had died. I couldn't keep the great big tears from coming. We can't always have the things we want somewhere or other. And though I lost my Mike, God sent me Mike's brother. My Uncle Harry brought him home. He's like Mike through and through. He's not Mike, but he's like Mike. So I love my brother, too.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. I know just how you feel, Sybil.
You do?
Yes, I do. Yes, indeed. You see, I once had a dog. We went everywhere together, the little fellow and I.
Have you still got him?
Well, no. I didn't feed him and he ran away.
Oh, Charlie.
Don't you believe him, Sybil. He's really a good fellow at heart.
Yes, I guess so.
Sybil now gives us another treat with I'm the Captain's Kid from her latest picture.
Make way! You're a big bad pirate. With a yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum, you better be aware, for here I come with a loaded gun, saber drawn and an awful ugly crew. So you better run, I'm after you. I am the captain's kid. I do the things that captain did. Buccaneer.
Cake and eat it too. That's practically what you do when you serve.
Sleepy Hall electrifies you now with his electric banjo with a desert song.
Oh my, oh my, oh my.
3 years ago, a blonde and comely young lady came out of California and flashed across the tennis horizon. Soon the experts were all predicting that a new star was born, and they were right. On one scorching day at Forest Hills last summer, she found herself receiving congratulations of Helen Jacobs, whom she had just defeated for the American title. Ladies and gentlemen, American tennis champion Alice Marvel, and her trainer, sponsor, and great good friend, Miss Eleanor Tennant. Miss Marvel, as a sort of a dabbler in the art of slapping a ball over and into the net, I'd like to ask you something more or less personal.
What's that, Mr. Bergen?
What are you doing tonight, Miss...
Do you think that women are as good sports and as good losers or winners as men are?
I think so. I know the best-loved person in all tennis is Helen Jacobs, on account of her splendid sportsmanship and courage. That was one reason why winning the championship from her last summer was not as pleasant as it might have been. I think Miss Tennant will agree with me on that.
Yes, I will. Helen is a very fine girl.
Well, we all can't win.
Oh, what a philosopher. What a philosopher. Miss Marble.
Charlie, please.
Yes, Charlie.
What are you doing tonight?
Alice is training, Charlie. She goes to bed every night at 10 o'clock.
Oh, that's too bad. I thought she might like to see a show or something else.
That will do, Charlie. That will do.
What are you talking about, Bergen? I bet you had the same idea yourself.
I must apologize for him, Miss Marble. By the way, are you in love?
Yes, with tennis.
Oh.
You see, Alice really hasn't time to be in love just now. She's concentrating on winning that Wimbledon championship in June.
Mm-hmm. And as an expert, Miss Tennant, what do you think of her chances?
I think they're very good. Of course, the tournament is full of crack players like Madame Sperling, Mathieu of France, Helen Jacobs. But Alice has a couple of advantages over them all.
And what are they?
Well, for one thing, she has the best footwork any woman ever had.
Yeah, I can see that.
And for another, she's the only woman who ever played who had topspin on her serve.
Topspin? What's that?
It makes the ball bounce queerly.
Bounce queerly? Did you ever see a Bergen's check?
Wait a minute. Young man, I'm really going to have to speak to you in a moment. Miss Marble, where did you get that topspin from?
Peaches, we call her. Helped bring it out. But I guess I was just lucky enough to be born with it.
Mm-hmm.
There was another thing that helped, though.
And what was that?
Well, you see, when I was young, I was a regular tomboy. I played baseball with boys all my life, and that helped strengthen the muscles in my arm. You know, I was mascot of the San Francisco Seals baseball team for 3 years.
I heard something about it.
It's true, and when I won the championship last summer, Lefty O'Doul, the Seals manager, sent me a telegram.
What did he say?
He said, always knew a swell left fielder would make a chance.
Well, I was a bit of a shortstop myself in the old days. However, coming back to the original subject, Miss Marble.
What can I do for you, Charlie?
Would you sort of like to go out tonight, say until 10:15?
Charlie, please.
What the heck? You can't blame a guy for trying.
I'm very sorry for the way Charlie has behaved tonight, ladies, and I do want to thank you for coming up here.
Oh, that's perfectly all right, Mr. Bergen. We didn't mind. We didn't mind him a bit.
You couldn't make it tonight, could you, Miss Marble? Until about 6:55?
Please, Mr. McCarthy, remember my amateur standing. Not tonight, tomorrow night, or any other night.
Well, I guess that clears that up.
looked at each other in the same way then, but I can't remember where or when.
The clothes you're wearing are the clothes you wore.
The smile you were smiling then, but I can't remember where or when. Some things that happened for the first time
we have met before and laughed before and loved before, but who knows where or when?
Guest this evening is a fellow that I have known for a long, long time. He and I have both played split weeks in vaudeville from Portland, Oregon to Portland, Maine. His name is Johnny Burke, and all through his career, he's been known to the trade as a single. That is, a fellow who works alone. Tonight, though, he has changed his routine, and he's working in double harness with Russ Brown, a trooper of no small attainments himself. Presenting now, Johnny Burke, assisted by Russ Brown, in Mr. Spooner Buys a Sinker. Mr. Spooner has felt the call of spring and, looking over his fishing tackle, finds that all he needs is a lead sinker. We see him as he enters an exclusive sporting goods store and finding him trying to attract the attention of one of the salesmen.
Nice store you have here.
Yes, madam, in the morning, first thing.
Say, young fellow, I say this is a nice place you have here.
Were you addressing me, sir?
Yes, sir. You see, I'm going fishing tomorrow, and I needed a lead sinker.
Oh, it's son of Isaac Walton, an angler, eh?
Oh, yes, well, I do a little fishing once in a while, too.
I see. You want some fishing equipment. Well, here are the finest flies in the city.
Flies? Well, what are flies for?
They lure the fish.
Oh, I always use worms.
These flies attract the fish by their bright colors.
Well, if the fish want colors this season, I'll paint the worms for them.
These flies are $3 each. How many do you need?
All I need is a lead sinker. You know, one of those
A mark of distinction to use flies like these.
Is that so? Then my wife was right.
What's that, sir?
You know, my wife said that that's what I lack.
What, flies?
No, distinction.
Then you're a married man.
Married man? If I'm not, I've taken a lot of abuse. It wasn't necessary. Say, don't I look like a married man?
Well, yes, you do look a little peaked. Do you get much exercise?
No, only fishing.
Don't you play golf?
No, I never even had a racket in my hand.
To start playing golf, you'll need about 24 balls.
All I need is a lead sinker.
They are $5 a dozen, but on second thought, I'll let you have 36.
That's very kind of you, but all I need is
Here is a set of perfectly matched clubs.
Now, what are they for?
To hit the balls with.
What, $5 a dozen and you hit them with a ball?
That's how you get the exercise. These clubs are marked down. Marked down, mind you, to only $85.
Marked down? I'm glad I didn't come in when they were marked up.
To play golf is a mark of distinction.
Well, I'll take them. I'll show my wife how distinctive I can be. And now, if you'll get me that lead sinker...
By the way, where do you do your fishing?
I fish in a pond about 3 miles from where I live.
And what do you do with it in the wintertime?
But what, the fish?
No, the pond. When the pond is frozen, what do you do?
I shovel coal in our furnace.
That's just what I'm getting at. If you had a good pair of ice skates, you could use the pond in the wintertime.
Ice skates?
Yes, and it just happens that we have a few pair left
over.
Wait,
just a minute. I came in here for a lesson.
Do you own a horse?
Do you sell horses here, too?
Why, no. Why do you ask?
Oh, I started to get suspicious.
No, no, we don't sell horses, but we do sell saddles.
Well, listen, when I say anything, do you hear me correctly? Do you...
Yes, yes, why?
Well, then why don't you get me a lead sinker?
But we were discussing saddles, sir.
We weren't discussing nothing. You were the only ones discussing saddles. I said nothing about saddle. What do I want with a saddle? I don't own a horse.
Where do you live?
I live in the Bronx. Why? Well, that's...
Oh, it must be nice to live in the country.
Yes, about 3 miles from where I live, there's two of the nicest trees you ever saw in your life.
Nice place for a dog. Have you a dog?
Yes, my wife has a dog. He's not mine. She says he's a dash hound. Every time I come in, he makes a dash for my leg. You know, he's one of those dogs that's a dog and a half long and only a half a dog high.
You mean a dachshund?
Yes, oh, he's a terrible dog.
I tell you, they make great pals for a horse. Why don't you buy a horse?
My wife wouldn't stand for a horse. She kicks when the dog gets in the bed.
Well, you could rent a horse. A horse would be good exercise for the dog, too.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. Maybe I could wear him out that way.
Now, here's a saddle. Here's a saddle called the Country Gentleman. A saddle like this will give you true distinction.
More distinction, huh? Well, how much is it?
$37. Marked down. Marked down, mind you, from $37.50.
You must have a price war on in town.
Shall I send it with the other thing?
Yeah, send the whole business. I'll show her what I can do.
What is the name, please?
Spooner.
Sooner?
No, not Sooner. Spooner.
Oh, Schooner.
No, not Schooner. Spooner. S-P-O-O-N-E-R. Spooner.
Oh, Spooner.
That's better.
And what are the initials, Mr. Spooner?
Well, what's that?
I said, what are the initials?
O-T.
O-T Spooner.
No, not O.T. Spooner, just T. Spooner.
Oh, I'm sorry, but you said O.T. Spooner.
I did nothing of the kind. I said T. Spooner.
But you said O first.
I did not say O first. When you asked me my initials, I was trying to think of what I came in this store for. And you surprised me, and I said O.H.
Then it's O.H. Spooner.
No, it's not O.H. Spooner. It's T. Spooner. My name is Theobald Spooner. T-H-E-A-T. Give me the pencil. I'll write it myself. And while I'm doing it, will you please get me a lead sinker? It's a piece of lead with a hole in it.
Yes. I know what you mean, but we don't carry lead sinkers.
What?
You get those in the ordinary hardware store. We cater to the distinguished sportsman only.
Say, just what is your idea of a distinguished sportsman?
A man that stands out.
Then if I sat on a saddle fishing with flies and played golf with ice skates on in the summertime, I certainly would stand out, wouldn't I?
You're very amusing, sir.
Very amusing, am I? Well, let me tell you something, young fella. As a salesman, you are distinctly distinctive. But you need something to make you stand out, and I'm going to give it to you.
No.
And when you wake up, you'll find a sinker on your blinker.
Give you the unusual in entertainment, we have at various times gone to far places in our search for talents and personalities. But next week, we exceed anything we have yet attempted. On that night, the Rudy Valley Variety Hour will be broadcast from London, where Rudy has gone to attend the coronation. Now let me tell you what's going to happen to Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. On Sunday, May 9th, at 8 o'clock New York time, Edgar and Charlie start on another venture with the Chase and Sanborn Coffee Hour, a new program under the direction of Don Ameche, with the great American composer and conductor, Werner Jansen, and his orchestra. Goodbye, Edgar, and goodbye, Charlie. Is there any word you'd like to have me give Rudy when he returns?
There certainly is.
Yeah, I wish Rudy was here so we could tell him ourselves.
Yes. So do I, but as long as he isn't, I wish you would say this to him. Tell him that now that we've been added to the long list of graduates of the Valley School, we wish to extend our deepest thanks to the professor whose advice and wise counsel made all these new things possible for us. Goodbye, Graham.
Goodbye, Edgar. Goodbye, Charlie.
Goodbye, boys. Goodbye.
And don't forget the biggest royal gelatin program next week from London, England.